I have to go upstairs and record something again, so
quiet.
Quiet and do not
smash anything.
And do not disturb.
Do not disturb.
Do not come into your room.
Hi, you're listening to Pandemic, a new podcast from RTE News and Current Affairs on the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Cullum O'Mungoyne, and most days of the week I'll be talking to RTE's correspondents, reporters and others to bring you news, updates and analysis you can trust. We can guarantee you a high quality of information. The sound quality, on the other hand, might vary somewhat sometimes, as correspondents and I will be recording this, in many cases, on mobile devices from home, so please do bear with us. It's Thursday, May 14th, and as we record this in the mid-afternoon, over 298,000 people have died around the world of COVID-19. Of those, in Ireland, 1,497 people have died. On today's episode, we're going to have a look in depth at the area of education because quite a lot has happened. So our education correspondent, M. O'Kelly, is going to bring us up to speed with what's happening in terms of pupils returning to school and indeed the lingering controversy over the leaving certificate and a few more issues besides. Another area we haven't dealt with on the podcast yet is the issue of meat plants. To date, a number of clusters have been found in this area. Our agriculture and consumer affairs correspondent, Fran McNulty, has been to a meat processing plant this afternoon and has been speaking to some people there, and we'll catch up with him about that. But first today, let's go to our correspondent, Sinead Crowley, for the latest on the most recent briefing. How are you, Sinead?
I'm very well, thank you, Cullum.
Testing, Sinead, you were at a briefing earlier today. What were you told at that briefing earlier on?
Yeah, we were given a briefing by Paul Reid and the HSE on plans for testing due to start next Monday, the 18th of May, that date that we're all looking towards for so many reasons. And it's an ambitious but seems a very positive plan if it comes to pass. They're saying they can do 15,000 tests a day from Monday and that there will be a turnaround time of 3 days from referral to contact tracing. So essentially, this is based on the fact that at the moment, about 97% of people who are tested get a negative test. So if you are tested, if you are worried, if you go for a test on the Monday morning, you should get, and you're negative, you should get that within 2 days, less if you're in a hospital anyway, slightly more if you're out in the community. And then if you're positive within 3 days, you'll know that you're positive, and also they will have done the contact tracing on the people who you have been around for the last while. So obviously that's hugely important in terms of certainty for people getting out and about, as you say. There's a certain group of people that the contact tracing won't be that simple, because if, for example, they're already very ill in hospital, or maybe English isn't their first language, that, you know, might be as easy. So these are a group, slightly more complex situation. But in general, if you've been living a life, I suppose, where you've just seen your family or a very small group of people and the contact tracing is fairly straightforward, this all is supposed to happen within 3 days, starting next week. And if this comes to pass, it is obviously going to make a difference for people in terms of the knowledge about the disease, where they can go, whether they're tested and so on.
And also delivery of results, Sinead, that was something that would cut down on the overall time. There was mention made, I heard Paul Reid speaking to Anya Lawler on the news at 1 earlier, while I didn't catch the briefing you were at, but he was talking in terms of automated test result delivery. There's been work done on that.
That's right. And there's talk of text messaging, and there's talk of, you know, working on all of the different procedures and all of the technical procedures to bring everything together and make it a lot more streamlined. I mean, Paul Reid has said, he said at the briefing, and he has said in interviews since, that he has literally never seen so much change happening so quickly across the HSE. He said that things are happening quickly, almost on a war footing, you know, that they have these up and running now. So you would get texts, you would get these tests, and all going well, you would know as much as you can know within 3 days for most people. So that would be seen as very positive. They're working with 3,500 GPs. Swabbing centres, as we know, have been set up, continue to be set up around the country, so that you wouldn't be discriminated against. For example, if you were in the rural part of Ireland, you still have access to the same type of testing. And yeah, that was all announced this morning and due to kick off on the 18th of May.
Now, the 18th of May has been a date for our diaries for quite some time with regard to 100,000 tests. And this is something people have been looking forward to, both for the 100,000 tests deadline and also for the easing of some of the restrictions we're currently experiencing. But it wasn't all that simple making promises like that, according to something our political colleagues are reporting on.
That's right. It's just been reported this afternoon. Some letters have been published on the government website between the HSE, between Paul Reid, the HSE's chief executive, and the Department of Health. And he raised concerns over NPHET's commitment to increase to 100,000 the number of COVID-19 tests per week. This was a letter written on Sunday, April the 19th, that appears to have followed on from one of the regular NPHET briefings, the one that took place on Friday, April the 17th. Mr. Reid says that he was taken by surprise by a letter from Dr. Tony Houlihan of NPHET and also by a NPHET press conference that talked about increasing testing. He says the directions on testing were at odds with what had been discussed at a cabinet subcommittee level and in meetings with the Secretary General to the government. And in his letter, Mr. Reid says he was disappointed that these understandings appear not to have been respected. So this appears to be the HSE saying that commitments were given, maybe that they didn't know these commitments were going to be given, essentially. But interesting, these letters have been released this afternoon. However, today is the day that the HSE has said, in fact, look, these 15,000 tests a day are going to happen and we're on target and they're going to start on Monday.
Right, so these can be all filed under that great phrase, constructive tension, that I think was used by Paul Reid before.
Yeah, well, it does appear to have been back and forth between department, between the HSE, but a lot of the letters also mention the fact that, I mean, these are unprecedented circumstances. Unprecedented is another word that has been used a lot, but obviously everything is moving very rapidly and very quickly. And again, he's the person who kind of mentioned war footing earlier in terms of how quickly they've had to get up and running with these. So I suppose let's wait and see what happens with the testing, but certainly the commitment this morning is along the lines of what people were looking for.
Now, shortly, we're going to hear from our colleague, the education correspondent, Emma O'Kelly, and we'll be talking about the Leaving Cert and other matters. And it was said back in the day that the Leaving Cert would go ahead by hook or by crook. Something else the government promised would be delivered would be childcare for frontline health workers. I think there was a cohort of around 7,000 people who were being prevented from going to work by, due to having no childcare arrangements in place. It's finally been admitted today that has also come a cropper for a number of reasons.
That's right. Actually, late last night, the department, Catherine Sapone's department, did admit that they weren't going to be able to go ahead with it. The plan would have been to have childcare workers go into healthcare workers' homes and look after their children there. But in the event, only around six companies signed up to it, and they had issues around surrounding insurance, surrounding the safety of the people going into the homes, you know, their own worries about viruses and so on. It's also known, for example, that a lot of childcare workers would be women and might have their own families to look after. So it clearly wasn't a straightforward process and it didn't work out. People are still, I suppose, waiting for some solution to that. There is a date later on in the summer when hopefully it'll be some childcare will officially be opened if the roadmap goes according to plan. So people looking towards that now. But there has been an awful lot of talk about children and childcare in general over the last couple of days, particularly with the Taoiseach saying yesterday that it might be a safe thing to do to reopen schools and childcare facilities. This followed on the medical studies that showed that maybe children weren't as big transmitters of the virus as people originally thought they were. But that, again, was very much, I won't say dampened down, but it was certainly addressed by Dr.
Yeah, go on, tell us what he had to say about that, because he is on the conservative wing of conservatism when it comes to the crisis handling here in this country.
He is, and he pointed out, as indeed Hickman pointed out, in fairness, that these studies about children were based on a small sample and a small number of studies. And yes, they did find what they found, but it wouldn't necessarily be enough information to change any major plans at the moment.
All right. Well, as I say, we'll have more of that with Emma O'Kelly shortly. All right. Thanks for that, Sinead.
Thank you.
There were a number of questions raised about the education sector, and we're going to hear about that in the second half of this episode. We're going to go to something that's happening today. Meat processing plants have been a particular area of concern. There have been a number of COVID-19 outbreaks in some facilities around the country. Our agriculture and consumer affairs correspondent, Fran McNulty, has been reporting from one of those facilities today. Let's catch up with him. How are you, Fran?
Hi, Colm.
How's it going? Where are you at the moment?
I'm actually in town. I'm outside the Department of Agriculture. We're here to... A lot of issues been raised in the Dáil today about meat plants, so...
Yeah,
and answers, hopefully.
You're just back from the Midlands. Where exactly were you today?
I was in Eden Derry. I've just arrived back into the city centre and I was at Ross Dairy Meats. That's a factory which might be familiar to some people as a result of the announcement 2 weeks ago that they had 120 cases in their plant in Ross Grey. It's probably a company not familiar to people before now, but they're actually quite big. They slaughter about 60% of the pig meat in this country, most of that going for export. And their problems in Eden Derry now, 56 cases confirmed, probably more to come out of a workforce of around 600. So it's really kind of highlighting the problem we're having in the meat plants and a problem that isn't just an Irish problem. Germany is seeing a fluctuation of cases now. in the States, you know, vast swathes of their meat industry were shut down because of it. And it's a huge problem.
Do we have any idea why, Fran? Because you'd think with, you know, sanitary and phytosanitary considerations in any food industry that maybe hygiene standards and health precautions would be of a higher order in an industry like that. We might see a lower rate of infection.
Yeah, and they are. I mean, like meat plants, it's not a particularly pleasant place to be when the meat is being slaughtered because it's a bloody business. But they are extremely clean. Like when they're not operating, they are spotless and they must be spotless. The problem is this. It's called a kill line in a meat factory where the animal is killed and it moves down and the carcass is cut and slaughtered and everything else and butchered. People are working cheek by jowl. They're right on top of one another and they kind of have to be. Now, the plants have done what they can to try and socially distance people, but the reality is people just need to be close. Also, the other thing is they can be very cold places and there's these huge kind of rubber plastic tubes that hang over all of these holes where these workers are. And what they're doing is blowing cold air in and circulating it around the facility. And there's a suspicion now by some people that this is a big factor in that. Now, you throw another thing into it. The vast bulk of people who work in the meat industry are migrant workers. They have poor English. They are being paid, in many cases, not a lot of money. So they live in shared facilities. They may not have a car, so their employers might bus them to the factory. Or they'll share cars. And very often they're living in conditions which are far from ideal. And all of those things brought together are causing concern.
And how widespread is it in the meat sector in Ireland? You mentioned that Ross Dare isn't the only place. It's been seen elsewhere and indeed it's a factor abroad as well. But in Ireland, from reporting on this, and you've been reporting on it now for some weeks, how widespread is it in this country?
We're being told 600 cases, something like 12 clusters. There is hardly a meat plant in the country that hasn't been affected by COVID-19. That's just a simple reality. Some of them have had 4, 5, 6 cases and everything is fine. Others, it seems to have ripped through them. And there's no rational explanation as to why. So you could have plants within the same companies where there's a big problem in one plant, there isn't a big problem in another. So nobody seems to have an explanation for it. Production is undoubtedly impacted. There was one plant I'm aware of where the staff numbers had dropped so much that they considered amalgamating two different halls where butchering was happening. It's a good job they didn't, because one of them had quite a number of cases of COVID-19 and the other didn't. And because they didn't amalgamate them, they've been able to continue production. So it's a problem. The reality is it's probably going to become a bigger problem. But the wake-up has been slow on it. It's like the meat industry, it's not a very open industry in terms of how it communicates these issues. I'll give you an example of that. You know, I will become aware of confirmed cases in a plant. You'll ring the company and say, I believe you have 40 cases. Could I get a statement on that? And then you just get a statement to say that we're members of Meat Industry Ireland and we're implementing all the protocols that are necessary. So they're not very upfront about it. It's a commercially sensitive business. And that's making getting a handle on things quite difficult. What I am doing and hearing from constantly are workers in the sector, people who are involved in regulating the sector, contacting us saying we have a concern about this. There is a problem here. I think it's reached a point now, today, come where something's going to have to happen. Micheál Martin standing up on the floor of the Dáil saying there's a problem with testing. And he raised one particularly odd situation. And we know this to have been happening, where there are a number of confirmed cases in a plant. They'll then decide to test all of the staff. So they'll bring 400 people in on a Saturday, test them, and then they all turn up for work on Monday before the results are back. And Micheál Martin saying today, like, that just can't happen. The plants need to close down. And, you know, Dennis Nocton standing up in the Dáil today saying this issue will become bigger than the nursing homes issue if you don't get control of it. And what's happening could be responsible for a second wave.
And you mentioned testing there, Fran, and people being brought in and mass testing being conducted in some plants. Has there been a concerted effort to target that sector? Is there testing going on as a matter of course in that, or is it initiated by the company and people being brought in?
What happens is when you have a confirmed case, it's naturally informed and immediately this special group that's set up becomes involved, the HSA, the HSE, the National Ambulance Centre coming in to carry out testing. So in the plant I was at today in Edenderry, earlier this week, a number of vehicles arrived in and they tested everybody in the facility. I think there's a recognition now that if you don't get on top of it quickly, it could get out of control. Paul Reid spoke to Anya Lawler on the News at One, and he said that the HSE teams had been going in where there was an outbreak and had been testing and dealing with that, but they were in the process of making recommendations, further recommendations on what should happen in these cases. And I think you're probably going to see a more strict testing regime come in, and something like Micheál Martin hinted at in the Dáil today, where basically there is a temporary shutdown to try and gather just how big a problem it is. What we don't want happening, because we've been lucky enough in this country, like in terms of supermarkets and food and everything, our supply chains have been proven to be very robust. We've coped much better than the UK with COVID-19. What we don't want happening is our meat plants starting to shut down, and then our supply of meat for those of us who do eat meat being affected. And that's what, as consumers, I suppose we'd all want to avoid happening. If things aren't brought under control, that could be a reality, because what's happening is it's spreading to such a scale. Like, there is one plant where some sources are telling me 50% of the staff in the plant have COVID-19.
And do you mind?
Or have had COVID-19.
And do they know, or when you say people are called in and they're tested and that, do they get their results back directly, or because this is alerted by the company itself, is it run through the HR system in the company? What way are the results delivered?
Yeah, in two instances that I know of, the company were dealing with it and the tests were sent back to the company. Then the company in turn contact the staff member and says, it's been confirmed you have COVID-19. You need to stay at home for X period of time. That appears to be the way it's working. Again, Colm, like, there will be a whole raft of GDPR issues that arise there, and some people will raise their eyebrows. If you try and understand the workforce there, many of them would have poor English. Their living conditions may be crowded, to say the least. Not all definite. A lot of these migrant workers tend to share accommodation. I know of one house where there are 8 or 12 guys sharing a house, and one group of them works in one meat plant and one group works in another. So that just gives you an idea of the complexity of their living conditions and why it's a problem. Yeah.
You touched on communications there, Fran, and you look for a statement and you get a fairly bland pro forma statement saying the protocols have been implemented. But then, of course, you go and talk to workers. So with, I suppose, information coming out in different ways from places like this, it seems counterproductive not to have full, transparent and open communication, because the level of concern is only going to increase in the absence of getting the full picture.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's the other reality that 2 weeks ago, Michael Creed, the Minister for Agriculture, stood up in the Dáil and said, we're aware of 8 clusters. I mean, to say that that was, you know, a bomb to the industry, they wouldn't have wanted or expected the minister to say that. But he said it. Because the reality is, you have NPHET, you have the department, you have the HSE, all having their briefings, and we've seen transparency in most other sectors. The reality is, we need to see it here too. And when you have the HSE and other groupings going in, carrying out examinations and tests in facilities, well, you know, they're going to speak publicly about that and put numbers on it. That's what they have been doing to date, and they will do it in the meat industry the same as anywhere else. Some of the concerns raised have been raised directly with the Health and Safety Authority. I know of 2 or 3 cases where complaints were made about working conditions in facilities, and the HSA went in to carry out an examination of those facilities. Bringing on board the HSE multi-agency approach appears to be the way to go with everything. And all of these agencies are crowded. They're busy. The demands that are being made of them are unprecedented as we speak at the moment. But I think today, you know, and I, as you say, I've been covering this story for a couple of weeks, and it hasn't been an easy story to cover because it's a difficult one to get in under. But today you can really see a turning point where, you know, it's been mentioned on the floor of the Dáil by multiple TDs. The minister is coming under pressure. The department is coming under pressure to get a handle on this, to do something. I mean, the word crisis has been used by Fianna Fáil today with regard to what's going on in the
meat factories. And are we expecting an action plan with more of a concerted effort? Are we expected to see that, or is it a sort of an incremental ramping up of what has already been done of the multi-agency teams going into individual companies?
There will be that. I think we will see change in terms of the testing in facilities. I think we'll see change on that probably within the next 4 or 5 days. Like, you have to remember one thing. So some people have scratched their head when they hear about 100 cases in a meat plant and the plant is still operating. They say, how possibly could it still operate? Remember this, the Health and Safety Authority, the HSE, all of the agencies of the state are in that facility, have inspected, have examined. And that's why those plants are still operating and still running. And then in other cases, you'd have very small, like Dawn Meats closed their plant in Kilbeggan. It's principally a boning hall. They closed it because of 4 cases of COVID-19. So the approach from different companies has been different, and the openness, I mean, Dawn were very open about that and came out and said, we're shutting down. Ross Deramietz, the company that's in focus again today, will issue a statement on what's going on, not confirming numbers. Some of the other companies won't. It's just a blanket wall goes up and will not speak about it. And Meat Industry Ireland is the representative group that speaks for them and talks about the protocols that have been put in place and how things are handled in the industry. And they'll constantly point out that you have, you know, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people working in the sector and just a couple of hundred cases. But they are still recognising there are issues and saying they will and are doing everything they can to deal with
it. All right, Fran, thanks very much.
Cheers, Tom.
And finally today, anyone who's in lockdown with their children wonders when the schools are going to reopen, and when they do reopen, what the school year is going to look like, how the curriculum is going to be taught, how indeed children will be seated in classroom environments. Well, we haven't touched on the area of education in quite some time, and it came up in the Dáil yesterday as the Minister for Education was fielding a number of questions, and a huge amount of issues have come up about that. So we decided today we'd have a look in depth at the area of education. So let's go now to our education correspondent, Emma O'Kelly. So Emma, how are you? Busy time for you at the moment.
Come extremely busy, and it looks like it'll be busy for months to come.
Yeah, well, let's kick off with yesterday, which was a busy day in the Dáil for the Minister for Education, but also the Taoiseach said that there'd be another look taken at bringing children back to schools and that being able to be done sooner possibly than was thought heretofore. I mean, it seems that there are a lot of challenges still there to do that.
There are, Colm, and the Taoiseach's comments were quite surprising, really. He said he was extremely positive. He was evaluating this research that was published and evaluated by HICWA yesterday, very, very positive, saying that bringing children back to school was among the safest things that we could do. And he spoke about bringing children back to school and also childcare. And he may have been referring specifically to childcare in the time frame that he talked about, because he talked about in the next 1 or 2 months. So that is an extremely optimistic, it's very optimistic for schools, because schools, as you know, Colm, secondary schools finish at the end of this month and primary schools finish at the end of June. So we were always talking about a September return. So extremely optimistic comments by Leo Varadkar. Also, he spoke about not wanting to be the last people in Europe to bring our children back. So he's very much has a sense of you know, the wider picture, and as he said, not wanting to be the last. So Tony Holohan, the chief medical officer, when he spoke later on yesterday, he poured a bit of cold water on this, and he said no, that they certainly were not anticipating any changes to the overall phased return or bringing schools forward in any way, and he said they would be looking at that evidence, but they didn't envisage a return to school earlier than that is already planned for September.
Well, and the WHO saying that coronavirus is going to be with us for the foreseeable future, and we know that a vaccine is probably quite some time off. So how are 25 plus children brought back to a classroom in September? The HICWA research that you mentioned there that we talked about on yesterday's episode saying that children are no more dangerous than anyone else, but they can still potentially spread it. So how do you sit 25 children in a school? Can it be done even with the classroom facilities that are there at the moment? How do they play together? How do they queue to get into their classroom? It seems to be hugely challenging.
Yes, and what kicked all this off this week as well was the news of the leaving certificate being cancelled or postponed until much later, because people were obviously saying, well, if you can't bring, you know, large numbers of 17 and 18 year olds together, how on earth are you going to manage with 4 and 5 year olds, a couple of weeks later? But yes, I was out at a school on Monday looking at this, and we looked at one classroom where the principal, Enda McGorman, told me that normally there would be 28 pupils in that class, and he had done a bit of measuring, and by the current social distancing restrictions, that class would only fit 6 or 7 pupils. So you, even before you get to that, as you mentioned, you have the school transport issue. How a huge amount of children, I think it's 30% of students here, rely on school transport and public school transport to get to school. So how are those children transported in buses? There were pictures, there was footage of schools in France, Colm, doing the rounds on social media yesterday.
Oh, children being spaced out quite widely in squares in the yard.
Exactly.
It looked quite depressing, to be honest.
I actually had to do a little bit of double checking to see, could there be any way that I was looking at something that had been mocked up, because they were so shocking and they were chilling. And nobody wants that for children. I mean, you know, the idea of children getting used to social distancing norms, of course, they may have to. But I think instinctively, parents feel, I don't want my child to have to get used to that, because children are social beings. They touch things, they put things in their mouths, they chew things to get to know them. They hug each other. That's very much part of their development. So really, there's planning going on in the department. September is quite a way away. We'd all obviously hope that that footage that we saw in France, we wouldn't be facing images like that.
Yeah, and for anyone who hasn't seen it, this is children sitting cross-legged in a large square in a schoolyard with teachers seeming to supervise them staying within their individual squares for the duration
of a break.
Exactly,
in their individual squares. The children are divided out, separated. It's extremely unsettling footage. This is now, we're in May. We're talking about opening our schools in 3 months' time. So hopefully that picture, hopefully, will have improved. Now, and that's where the research comes in, because we have these initial findings, these findings from very small studies that were done and very initial studies. And this is what HICWA published yesterday. They published their assessments of those studies. And those studies are finding that, for one thing, and this is really important, children are not the super spreaders that people thought they may be at the beginning of this pandemic. They are certainly, it seems, no more likely than anyone else to pass on the virus. And also, there are some indications, but they need to be validated, that perhaps children even spread the virus less than other people do. But this, I mean, the jury is really out on this. But obviously, as more research comes on stream, we will get a clearer picture as to the role that children play in both spreading the virus and also the impact that the virus may have on children. And obviously, we would all hope for research that would be positive and that would indicate that perhaps we can be a little freer in terms of bringing students back to schools and allowing for some form of mixing. And Colm, even the curriculum, I was speaking to one senior person in education earlier this week, and they were pointing out that our curriculum is based around active learning, around collaboration. I mean, parents often tend to think, when they think of their child's education, they think back to their own days. But education couldn't be more different to what it was in the days of parents. Children sit in groups around tables. They work very much together. The teacher and the special needs assistants and other staff, they move around the classroom. They're working very, very physical close proximity with children. And this is how children learn. So one senior educationist I was talking to was saying, well, are we going to have to go back to the 1977 curriculum, the old way where the teacher was at the top of the class, the students were in rows, and there was very little movement around the classroom. And nobody wants to see that happen.
Well, as you say, a huge amount of questions, and some of those questions were being asked in the Dáil of Joe McHugh yesterday, the Minister for Education. So first of all, I mean, to take it from what we thought was an established area, the Leaving Cert, and we thought the questions perhaps had been answered on that. Not so. The people who are individually taking subjects outside of school, people who are, we'll say, taking a foreign language that's not offered by their school, but whose parents might speak it, so for example, Polish or Russian, it's not clear how this might be marked yet.
Yes, Colm. I mean, students who were looking for the Leaving Cert to be cancelled, the very large number of students who wanted that, were one of their arguments was that they wanted certainty. So while the announcement last Friday to give calculated grades instead of the Leaving Cert, while that did give an element of certainty, it has thrown up an unending series of questions. And one of the areas is the one that you mentioned, is the students who have been studying subjects independently of teachers and who have no teacher to give them a calculated grade. They are extremely concerned and they're wondering, well, what happens to me now? So you have students who've been homeschooled, you have students who are repeating, and in that group there could be a student who's repeating one subject, maybe Irish, so that they can go and do a master's in education, for example. They may have been working on that subject by themselves and now they go, well, who's going to judge me? And initially the department said, well, unfortunately, those people will have to wait. They'll have to sit the exam and they won't have that result available for this year. But there may be change to that because the department has said it will give more information on this next week. Within that group, as you said, is a group of around 2,000 students who sit what are called non-curricular EU languages. These are students who would be fluent in perhaps Russian or Polish or Romanian or Latvian, all these languages, and who would have expected to sit the Leaving Certificate exam in that subject. Those students traditionally do fantastically well. For example, with Russian, I think more than 90% of people who sit the Russian exam get a H1 and get full points. So I've spoke to a lot of those students this week. They're really relying on that, those 100 points to get into the courses they want. Some of those students also wouldn't have Irish because they might have come here when they were 10 or 11. And so they need, many of them, some of them will need a language for matriculation purposes as well. Now, quite a number of these students have been would have attended Saturday classes with a qualified registered teacher. So they should be okay. But then there are other students who attended classes, but the teacher is not registered with the teaching council. So there's a whole grey area there as to what will happen to these students. And it's important to remember that these students are doing something that the government has very much encouraged. The government wants to give validation to a student's mother tongue. And also there's a very clear economic reason, because if we have young people here who can speak several languages fluently, well, obviously that's really good for Ireland. So that's one area. Yeah.
And the oral was cancelled this year, so they don't even have that to go on.
No, well, now, if they sit the Leaving Cert, they will do the oral. But yes, the oral was cancelled, exactly. But there's other areas as well there's that need to be addressed. There's in terms of the Leaving Cert, and even beyond that, then there's questions about fifth years, for example. What's going to happen with this year's fifth year cohort of students? They feel that they've been forgotten about because there's been so much of a focus on sixth years. But if you take fifth years, they have lost a huge amount of their teaching hours this year. So there's concerns around them. There's concerns around children with disabilities who've been left at home with very little to help them.
Yeah, there's a couple of issues there. Maybe talk us through a couple of them, Emma. Not only, you know, the structured day, but also there's another programme that goes on into July for some students as well.
Yes, children with disabilities, many of them access a programme called the July Provision. And it's a programme whereby they get 10 hours tuition a week from a teacher. And this is to support them over the summer months and to ensure that they don't regress in their learning. And it's a really, really important programme for example, children with autism. There were concerns that this may be cancelled this year. It doesn't look as if it will be cancelled, but there are concerns around how will it be provided because, of course, of the wider situation regarding people not working and all the restrictions. So in the Dáil yesterday, politicians asked for flexibility around July provision. They asked, for example, could this programme not run in the weeks before students go back to school? And this would, for if you take a child, for example, with autism, who's been out of school now for months, these children, they need certainty in their lives. They need routine, especially. And they've fallen out of that routine. And parents are saying it's going to be very hard to get them back into a school routine. So, for example, if this July provision programme could be run in August instead to allow these children again to acclimatise to the idea of a school routine, that would be really valuable. Now, to that, the minister said, gave an answer that he has been giving to very many questions. And it's understandable why. He said that his department officials were open to the idea and that they were looking at the issue. And that's the answer to very many areas, because it's understandable that there's so many new areas, so many issues have been thrown up, and there are so many issues to be examined and decided upon. The minister also said yesterday, he said he understood that there were things that had to be done quickly, but they also had to be done right. I imagine he was referring, or maybe subliminally, to the fact that fast decisions were made on the junior certificate exams. Those decisions unravelled. A pretty quick decision was made on the Leaving Cert, in terms of this
by hook or by
that
crook.
They would go ahead, yeah. Yes, by hook or by crook, and that too unravelled. So there is a danger in making decisions too quickly, on the one hand, because they may unravel, but on the other hand, parents, students, teachers, schools, so many people are crying out for some sort of certainty, if only so that they can begin planning.
Just a couple of final ones then, Emma. The issue of schools in disadvantaged areas, DESH schools. So there are concerns that no matter how good the achievement, the students may not get the recognition because the historic performance of the school may play into the marking of that school once it's thrown into the broader mix. What are the concerns there?
Yes, well, this is one of the concerns around calculated grading as a method. There's research that has been done in the UK which has found that high-performing students who are attending disadvantaged schools suffer in calculated grading systems. They do less well than they would if they were to sit an exam. One of the first reasons is could be teacher bias, that teachers don't recognise this. But the main factor that people are concerned about here is that the mechanisms which have been introduced here mean that a teacher will mark and grade all of her or his students, but then the profile of the school will be applied to those marks. So, for instance, if a school got 4 H1s and 7 H2s and I don't know how many H3s in previous years, well, then it would be expected that that school would get roughly the same number of those grades this year. So the danger is that a particularly high performing student who's attending a DESH school with a record of lower attainment will be basically tarred with the brush of past years, basically. And this is a concern that politicians raised in the Dáil yesterday. It was raised by Éan Ó'Riordán, it was raised by McBarry, raised by a few others. Now, in answer to that, the minister said that progression in disadvantaged schools and other schools with low academic attainment would be taken into account. But there are certainly great fears around this and around whether it will mean that students from disadvantaged areas will be further disadvantaged.
And I
think Éan Ó'Riordán, what he said was a student in an elite, high-performing school, an average student in one of those schools, that he would be very happy with this system. But perhaps it may be very different for a high-performing student attending a school with a low academic attainment records.
And finally then, Emma, people who feel that they have been unfairly treated, say for example in the Leaving Cert in particular, the idea that, you know, there are several hoops you can jump through to try and have, you can go through an appeal, you can actually sit the Leaving Cert if you want, although that's not much good to you for this year's Leaving Cert. And ultimately there is a fear within the Department of Education that litigation may be a looming spectre at the end of all of this. That's something that may not be open to students that we just mentioned there of more limited means from disadvantaged schools. But the area of litigation is an area of concern for the Department of Education this year, is it?
Yes, the minister said that when he made this announcement about the calculated grades on Friday. He said that the system did have legal vulnerabilities. This is one of the reasons why part of the appeals process is that you can sit the Leaving Cert. It won't be much good to you for this year in terms of getting into college. And the department and the minister is at pains to point out that the Leaving Cert has not been cancelled. You can sit the Leaving Cert. And I think that is probably very much for legal reasons as well, because a student can say, well, look, I had a legitimate expectation to sit the Leaving Certificate exams, and that is what I've been working towards for the past 2 years. And of course, the answer to that is, well, you can sit the Leaving Certificate exams. We are running the exams. We will run them when it is safe to do so. That is one way in which they have addressed potential litigation. But there is still a concern that cases will be taken. And it's not just the department that is concerned about litigation. Teachers and schools are also concerned. And this is one thing that the teacher unions have been trying to box off in private talks with the department this week. They want to guarantee that the teachers themselves will not be vulnerable to legal action. Because if you think to the very start of this process, it is the teacher initially who will look at a student's performance and award a mark to that student. So they want legal protection. Schools also want to be indemnified because they don't want parents coming after them saying, you didn't treat my daughter or my son fairly. So there are legal issues that are being ironed out at the moment in terms of teachers and schools. And yes, there is the danger or the fear that we will see parents. It could be a student who missed out on a high points course by several points in their predicted grades. And, we could very well see, you know, cases like this coming before the courts.
All right, Emma. Thanks very much for that.
OK, Colm.
Cheers. Thanks a million, Emma.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
And that's all for this episode of Pandemic. We're back tomorrow with more. In the meantime, do get in contact with suggestions or questions by email to colm.omongain@rte.ie. That's colm.omongain@rte.ie. Or on Twitter at @ColmOmongain. Do subscribe through your usual podcast platform to get this podcast regularly. Reviews are welcome. And of course, nice reviews even more welcome. So until tomorrow, take care. See you.